Don't you know you're not supposed to write in a book? This was drummed into me from an early age that one did not do that. It was almost kind of sacrilegious. But yes, I do it. Often as notes in the margin to myself, questions, things to confirm, ideas to probe if I'm going to use it in class. Yeah. Sometimes I feel like I'm addressing the author. What does that mean? How do you know? Where did that come from? Are you kidding me? But mostly these notes are for me, and it never occurs to me that anyone else will ever see or read or care about them. These kinds of notes are known as marginalia, and when they do survive and are discovered, they can often be of historical interest. What did Mary Todd Lincoln think of Thomas Jefferson? Mostly, they're never noticed, but one of the most well-known examples had a profound effect on untold numbers of mathematicians for 3.5 centuries until the last I was dotted and the last T was crossed. Whatever the reason. A document that changed the world. Marginal notes in a 1621 edition of Diophantus's Arithmetica, written by Pierre de Fermat and now known as Fermat's Last Theorem. Probably about 1637. I'm Joe James of the University of Washington Information School, and I want to thank again my former student, Brooke Scheibler, who researched and collaborated on this episode. Yes, math. Yay! But it's going to be okay. Remember the Pythagorean theorem for right triangles? It says that if you add the squares of the lengths of the two short sides, that will equal the square of the hypotenuse. At the end of The Wizard of Oz, the Scarecrow gets that wrong, but remember, he never did get that brain. Think of the old 3-4-5 right triangle. 9, 3 squared, plus 16, 4 squared, equals 25, 5 squared. Voila! Mathematicians represent that as an equation, x squared plus y squared equals z squared. Independent versions of this theorem were known around the world for centuries, long before Pythagoras in the 6th century BCE. You likely have never thought about this, but what if we went beyond squares, powers of 2 here? Would this work, whole numbers for x, y, and z, if we were talking about cubes, x cubed plus y cubed equals z cubed, or fourth powers, or any power beyond 2? Formally stated, are there integer solutions to the equation x to the n plus y to the n equals z to the n for any n greater than 2? Well, that seems simple enough. How hard could it be to figure that out, right? As it turns out, really hard. We move to 17th century France. Pierre Fermat, or de Fermat, after he purchased a position as a local magistrate, was a lawyer and occasional multilingual poet who also dabbled, quite seriously, in mathematics in a time where that wasn't unusual. He particularly focused on problems of the emerging fields of calculus and probability, laying important foundations in both. He's best known for his work in what's called number theory, which is what it sounds like, the story of the integers and their properties. That's prehistoric, going back as far as the concepts of odd and even numbers. Traditionally, number theory was viewed as the purest of pure mathematics, with proudly little if any application in the real world, at least until public key cryptography based on extremely large prime numbers got hot in the 1970s. Rather than writing and publishing fully formed solutions to problems, Fermat preferred correspondence with other mathematicians, also typical then, such as Descartes and Pascal, tossing off assertions, or guesses, or intuitions, which he claimed he had solved, and challenging them to duplicate his work and sweat the details, which I can only imagine got old after a while. He was also taken to making copious marginal notes in his books, which his son then published in later editions, special editions, after Fermat's death in 1665, sparking even more investigation into his claims. The damnable thing is, he was almost always right, which I can imagine made people even crazier. One by one, his claims were proven, but one little note scribbled in Latin in the first widely available edition of a work by the ancient Greek mathematician Diophantus resisted. It is impossible to separate a cube into two cubes, or a fourth power into two fourth powers, or in general, any power higher than the second into two like powers. I have discovered a truly marvelous proof of this, which this margin is too narrow to contain. I mean, right off, that's bogus. The margins of that particular book are quite spacious, but that was his MO. It's tricky to trace the origins and history of marginalia, since most of them are intended to be private or at least personal. Many sources trace them back to scholia, notations in the margins of Bibles and other religious works, passing notes and insights for future generations of readers of scarce manuscripts. It's hard for me to think something like this wouldn't have been done in ancient times on papyrus, say, tricky in cuneiform on clay tablets, I grant you. It's also not strictly an analog phenomenon. Think of comments in word processing documents or on social media posts or web pages. Sadly, Fermat's original copy of the Arithmetica appears to be lost. He was so often right that later mathematicians assumed it would be only a matter of time until a proof for this little problem was found. As the years passed, progress was made. Fermat himself proved it for powers of 4, and demonstrated that any solution had to be for a prime number exponent. For centuries, it lingered with proofs for 3 and 5 and 7, and somewhere along the way, the problem took on the name of Fermat's last theorem, not the one he stated, but the last one to be solved. You know it's a thing. It made it to The Simpsons and to Star Trek The Next Generation, which incorrectly predicted it wouldn't be solved by the 24th century. When mathematicians talk about proving something, they're not kidding. They mean it. A proof is exactly that, a deductive or inductive argument leading from a set of axioms and already proved things to a logical and inescapable conclusion. There's no fudging, no squinting, no speculation, no surveys, no experimentation, no discussion. It's a rigid and formal process. When I was an undergraduate math student, if I couldn't figure out how to get to where I knew I had to go in a proof, I'd try fudgy little phrases like clearly, or it is obvious that, or it follows immediately that, the next point, which almost never worked because that's the oldest trick in the book. Mathematical proofs are undeniable and certain, which is what often makes mathematicians smug around people like physicists. Close doesn't count. Nor does demonstrating that there aren't any solutions to Fermat's problem for, let's say, values of n up to 100 or 1,000 or 10,000 or several million, which was how things progressed incrementally using tons of computer power. Well, fine, good to know, thank you, but as any number theorist worth their salt will tell you, there are infinitely many integers, and who's to say one of them, way out there somewhere, won't be the one? So the search for an absolute and definitive proof slogged on through the decades, using multiple approaches I can barely pronounce, let alone explain. How many pencils, how many crumpled pieces of paper and cups of coffee, how many lives and careers and missed meals went by the wayside in pursuit of this grail? We'll never know. But finally, in 1993, on the front page of the New York Times, the headline reads, "At last, shout of Eureka in age-old math mystery," describing a series of lectures on elliptic curves given by Andrew Wiles, a British mathematician then at Princeton. With a flair for the dramatic not normally associated with math, at the end of the third lecture, he casually remarks that, oh, by the way, this result proves Fermat's last theorem, the end. Wait, what? Wiles had been fascinated by the problem since childhood, when he read about it in a book at his public library, and knew from that moment he would never let it go. He'd been focused on it exclusively and in secret, in his attic, day and night for several years, releasing already done work for publication to keep it under wraps. It turned out the version he presented was flawed, so it needed to be repaired. He nearly gave up after a year of additional work, but in a last gasp, he re-examined what he had, and the light dawned. "It was so indescribably beautiful," he later said. "It was so simple and so elegant. Nothing I ever do again will mean as much." He published his final version, over 100 pages, in 1995. Later, in an interview, he described a sense of melancholy, both in himself and for the community. "We've lost something that's been with us for so long, but that now his mind was at rest." He received numerous awards and prizes for this achievement, including a knighthood, and an asteroid was named for him. This leaves us with a few questions. First of all, did Fermat have it, or really think he did? Given the length and complexity of Wiles's proof, it couldn't have been that. So either he had a simpler method we haven't discovered yet, or a flawed proof, or a guess, or maybe he was just messing with generations of mathematicians in the most roundabout way imaginable. And after all that time and work, there must have been a substantial impact, right? Surely lots of real-world consequences and benefits to humankind. Not really, no. One commenter rather archly compared it to the moon landing. It barely advanced mathematics as a whole, but the approach yielded important advances in other related areas. Huh. Okay, well, then, what's the point? What was it all for? Here we get to the nub of the matter and so much of human endeavor. It's a silly little thing, simple to understand, though insanely difficult to prove. Over the years, it became sort of a philosopher's stone, or El Dorado, the fountain of youth, the white whale, an obsession, a thing to be conquered. Why work on it 350 plus years on a tossed-off marginal note? Because it's there, because it's so simple, so beautiful. Nobody's done it, and I want to, for its own sake. So here's to all the ones who tried and failed at this and at other seemingly impossible ventures. It was worth the effort, win or lose, no matter the reason, and we salute you.